A few months ago, my mother turned to me and said, "You know, June is Pride Month and the theme is transformation. It would be good to have a reflection on transgender issues." She had just written a monologue about being the mother of a transgender son for another event. She ran the monologue by me before performing it to make sure that she got everything right. She asked me if I wanted to do the reflection or if she could adapt and lengthen the monologue. It wasn't a contest. I love my mother, and I think that monologue is excellent. That being said, it's always better to hear a story from the source. I told her I'd do it. As I thought over how to put my story down into words, I realized that even as the source of the story, I couldn't paint an entire picture of it. Every detail changes the entire tone and meaning. If I added one memory in place of another, suddenly it sounded completely different. I couldn't find a way to tell, in the words of Law, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And so, I am here today to tell you three stories. All of them are true, or were to some extent. The first story begins with a little girl named Amelia Grace Durham, born in the fall of 1993. She was a sweet child, always full of smiles. When she lied, she could taste it on her tongue, so she tried to never lie. She loved stuffed animals more than any other kind of toy, but you could always find her by the dress-up box at school. What she dressed up as varied, cowgirl, princess, fairy, as long as it was elaborate, she was happy. When she grew older, she started writing. Her main characters were always female. She was certain she would never understand how boys thought, after all. People said they were just the same, but she didn't see that at all. When she wasn't writing, she was reading stories praised for their strong female characters and books of feminist folktales. She found solace and strength in the long line of women that came before her. She dreamed of being an actress someday and looked at every character in every movie and play she saw and muttered to herself, "I wouldn't play it that way." And then, one summer, she came home and told her mother she wasn't a woman. That's the first story. The second begins much the same, with a little girl named Amelia Grace Durham, born in the fall of 1993. She was a cautious child who was afraid of everything, but especially people. Her first memory of school was the boys in her class ganging up to punish any girl who went outside during free time. They only stopped when one broke a tree branch over her head and her mother called his. The lesson was learned. Boys were dangerous. She continued to live by that as she got older, clinging to the company of girls and, with few and conditional exceptions, staying away from boys. It was happy enough. When she lied, she could feel it coil in her chest. So she learned to believe that whatever she said was the truth. She had trouble making friends, so whatever got her attention, she would repeat. One time, a girl complimented her tiered skirt. She thought it was a bit ridiculous, but she bought several more just in case. When she read stories of women who had struggled like her or magazine articles on how to be happy when it seems like half the world is against you, she learned that you needed to love your body, especially the parts that made you a woman. She didn't, but she loudly said that she did, praising this part or that part of her body until she could see it was worthy of whatever she said. Still, some parts of her body felt almost detached from her. Worthy of praise they might be, but she'd rather they were on someone else. People took photographs of her. She'd stand for them and she'd pose for them, but whenever she looked at those photos, she'd remember what she was thinking when they were taken. And more than half the time, it was, "I hate my smile. Everything feels so forced. I posed like this and I didn't feel like I was myself at all." That being said, through the last years of high school, she was starting to warm up to male friends, starting to play games with them again, and actually realize that she could find something in common there. And when she moved to college, she tried to keep a hold of the friends that she had, but started falling out of contact because, as she was afraid of people, it was hard to reach out. So when people reached out to her, she'd do anything to keep and make them keep doing so. Some mistakes were made in that process. But she got to college, and everyone there was so welcoming. They helped her find things to love about her body that she never had before. And yet, the more that they praised it, the more she realized that she wasn't comfortable in it. The idea that she could be made her realize that she wasn't. And so she started to realize that maybe she wasn't a woman after all, but she wasn't sure what she was, because she had always remembered boys were dangerous, boys are not you. You need to stay away from them. So for a while she tried to be something between, and yet the longer that she tried to be that, the more that she realized that in the end, she was a boy, that they weren't different or dangerous, that she'd just been hiding all along. So she came home and told her parents, "I am a man." That's the second story. The third begins with a little boy, born in the fall of 1993. He didn't have a name yet, not really. He thought that the gender war, the boys versus girls, everything like that was utterly ridiculous. So he'd side with the boys when things seemed unfair, on playgrounds, capturing forts. He called himself a tomboy because that was what word he had for it, and his mother looked at him like he was crazy and said, "But you love stuffed animals and dresses and everything." And he never really had a response to that, but he felt it was true nonetheless. He loved to wear, and one time he wore tights and shorts because he wanted to wear the shorts, but it was the middle of winter, and even in Seattle, it's a little cold for that. And then he realized how boyish it made him feel, and he'd wear them over and over again. He was playing video games, and well, he'd usually choose the female protagonist since, you know, he thought he was a girl at the time. He'd swap between them, playing the male Pokemon trainer or creating a new character for himself. The character he empathized most with was Lloyd Irving from Tales of Symphonia, and he never quite understood why. As he grew older, he read stories upon stories of people who, for whatever reason, were turned into boys or girls, and had to deal with knowing what they were inside and what they were on the outside wasn't matching. He fell in love with that entire genre and would read any story he could get his hands on in it, even if he didn't like them at all. He knew that there were some clothes that weren't flattering on him, that didn't show off the parts of his body that he was supposed to show off. But there was one black tank top that made everything like that vanish, and sometimes it was the only thing he could wear to get through the day. He always used to joke that what he wanted most when it came to his style of dress was to be an honorary drag queen. He never wanted to be a drag king. Whenever he thought about dressing up as a man, he just wanted to wear normal clothes. When he went to college, one of the most important things was the people. During his overnight at one college, he went to a rehearsal for a show, then wandered over to a meeting for a queer social club that sounded interesting. From there, two people swept him up, took him to an improv show, and taught him to play Magic the Gathering. He was sold. When he came home, he would talk for hours about all of his friends. The names and pronouns that belonged to each of them shifted over time, so he made sure to clarify every time he realized that someone didn't know who he was talking about. Then slowly, he started to realize that maybe a change of pronouns and name were in the cards for him as well. He actually put together a spreadsheet where every day for about a month, probably, he would look through several pronouns and go, which applies to me most today? At first it was they or a few other gender-neutral pronouns, and then he realized that over time It was he over and over again that was the best in pronoun for him that day. So he realized this was something that he had to live, that he wasn't comfortable trying to be something that he wasn't anymore. It took effort to come out at home, because well, he knew that no matter what, his parents would love him. This was something that he knew they'd never anticipated. And so he kept a hold of it for a long time, never mentioned anything about it until he was home for Christmas, I think, right around then. And quietly in the corner, he picked out his own name. There was a nickname that he'd been going by in the meantime at college, so he wanted to pick a name that still went with that. That was Indy at the time. And he wanted to make sure that he followed the same naming rules that his parents had followed when he named all three of their children. One, it had to be pronounceable in Spanish. Two, there were just certain levels of commonness, because we always wanted to make sure that it wasn't too common. Kind of lost out on that with Benjamin, but you know, it happens. And he wanted to keep some element of his own original name, because he knew his namesakes. His father had given him a whole book of people who shared those names. So he settled on Martin Emilio Durham, but he didn't tell anyone until he could ask his parents first. Then after that, once they knew about everything and he had his name, he wouldn't go by anything else. He got his legal name changed. He got testosterone. Some of you who've been at church longer might have noticed that my voice is way deeper than it used to be. I sing in an entirely different key. And then just recently, he got his driver's license updated, finally. Kept meaning to go to the DMV. And he was happy. That's the third story. Pretty different, aren't they? The way that I thought about it when I was telling this was that the first story was the public story, the one that I was trying to cover for the first 20 years of my life. The second story was the private story, the one that I felt I was living throughout the entirety of that. And then the third story is the one that in retrospect might have been the most true. But it's hard to know when you only see it looking back on it. I wanted to tell all three stories because there's a typical story told about trans people that they always knew that from the very beginning, everyone around them knew, and whether they denied it or not, there was always something there. And for me, that's not true. I can find the signs when I look for them, but for the first 20 years of my life, I didn't see them at all, and no one else around me did either, except for one person at college who told me later that they'd totally called it, but that's different. And sometimes that means that people don't recognize what they are until years after they could have. And that's always sad to hear, because transitioning for me was such a wonderful thing that finally made me feel like I belonged and that I was happy. The thing is, I do want to make sure that everyone understands. All three of those stories are true. Every single moment, every single thing that I said today was true. Just some of them were true at different times. Truth changes. It's not something objective that is always solid and steady. There is no whole truth, nothing but the truth. Because to have the whole truth, you would need to live my entire life, and frankly, that's inefficient and impossible. And nothing but the truth. How can you know what's true when you're living it? I think a lot about the whole story of we're born this way, nothing made us this way. And I'm not sure that's true. Would I have realized that I was trans if I hadn't gone to college and met all of the people that I met? Would I have realized that I was trans earlier if I hadn't had that experience in kindergarten with my classmates? But it's impossible to know, because we don't have access to that information. Whatever world that happened in, it's not this one. And I realize that in a lot of ways, it doesn't matter what made me who I am today, because who I am today is who I am. Whatever reason is given for that, it doesn't change, and doesn't change that. Where am I today? I'm happy. I'm living the truth. I'm out at work. I don't tell everyone who calls into our call center that I am a sir and not a ma'am, because frankly that would take hours and it's just not worth the effort. But I know that all of my coworkers know the truth, and I know that everyone who meets me does. And that's enough. Where am I going in the future? I don't know. Whatever is true today may be different tomorrow. Whatever I decide in the next few years may be different than what I think it will be. But I know that wherever I'm going, I am living the truth, no matter what it costs me or what people I lose because of it. Because no matter what, it's never worth it to lie. Thank you.